TSN 1050, streaming online now on TV, TSN 4. Andy Petrillo alongside former Toronto Marlies head coach, three-time Stanley Cup champ Greg Gilbert, Sports Center host here on TSN, Mr. Mark Rowe. We're going to have former Toronto Maple Leaf player Dominic Moore join us to talk about the sixth annual Smash Fest, a little ping pong, as I like to call it.
I think a lot of people call it ping pong.
Well, there's some people that say no,
it's table tennis.
Yeah,
I guess so.
Show some respect. I don't just say ping pong, it's like ping pong.
Ping pong.
Ping pong. Love it.
Pretty good ping pong slash table tennis, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah.
These hockey players are pretty good at other sports. Golfing, yeah. Ping pong.
And when you're raising money for a good cause, for charity, and it turns out to be a fantastic night, why would you not want to be a part of it? It'll be July 20th in Toronto, 6th annual. Dominic Moore will come on to talk a little bit more about it. I want to ask him who's the best. Like, out of the 5 years already that they've had this event, who's the best player?
Well,
a lot of Leafs are there.
Ask him if there was an NHLPA ranking system, who would be coming in as the number one seed.
Mm.
That's what you should ask him.
Is that working? Why don't you ask him that?
Oh,
cool. You ask him.
You,
yeah.
Are you a good ping pong player?
Yes! Yet?
Oh,
yes.
Have you seen some of the clips of those guys?
I know. Some of it's nutso. Like, I'm not Olympic caliber over here.
No one thought you were Olympic caliber, Andy. It's okay. You don't need to tell us that.
Let's just get that clear.
Because if you were, you probably aren't hosting Leafs Lunch.
No. I am practicing my ping pong game, and I have my bejeweled paddle, and I am heading on over to Japan. That's where the next summer games will be. That's what I'd be getting ready for. But no, I mean, I can play a mean game of ping pong. Pretty good.
Okay.
How about you? I mean, isn't that what you guys play a lot in the dressing room?
No, we never had the tables in there. We didn't have the soccer balls. We were too busy just sitting, not talking to each other.
What did you guys do?
Really, not much.
The game's really changed.
You practiced, you went to lunch, you went home, you got up the next morning, did the same thing. So we didn't have any of that stuff.
When you were coach of the Marlies, did they have stuff?
Well, they had the soccer balls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's when the soccer balls came in. And then I can't remember. I don't think we had a ping pong table, though. Or ping-a-pong table.
Ping-a-pong. See, that was... Dion Phaneuf was huge in that. When he was with the Leafs,
right.
That's what we would shut down the room, and he's like, time to get the tournament going, and I know he loved to play that.
Well, he had a couple of battles with Kessel.
There was some good battles there.
Phil the Thrill wasn't very happy a few times.
Well, was it in the one HBO segment where I guess Dion went, like, good game, and Phil's like, don't give me that.
Yeah.
Don't give me that good game crap. I don't want to hear it. That's kind of me when I lose. I'm going to admit that. So we were discussing Dion Phaneuf and how both Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider, say it sounds like Dion Phaneuf will not trade or waive his no-move clause to be exposed in the expansion draft, or I guess be traded by the Ottawa Senators, which then puts them in a position to make a decision of who they leave exposed, whether it's Mark Methot, whether it's Cody Ceci. We were discussing, because we know Erik Karlsson, of course, will be protected, and if Dion doesn't waive his no move, then they're forced to protect him. And I brought up that it's in the player's right. You know, I mean, you can expect that there is going to be a certain fan base there that's going to have backlash. But when you negotiate that in good faith, and I get that it was negotiated here in Toronto, that was a Dave Nonis deal that he did with Dion Phaneuf, the Ottawa Senators took him on knowing that existed. So you just, you know that a player has it.
He helped them get to where they got this year. You know, like, put the money aside, he was a really important part of that blue line. Mm-hmm. Maybe not Erik Karlsson important, but he was a pretty important part.
Yeah, Erik Karlsson got
also
a Conn Smythe
nomination. We keep talking about it throughout this whole show, being slotted in the right spot.
Yeah.
Now, he's slotted in the right spot in Ottawa. It's just his contract doesn't slot into that spot. And that's the issue.
How does that affect a player moving forward? Like, if you just say no, like, if you just don't want to go along with what management's asking you to do. So let's just say he doesn't waive it, and that is, in fact, the case. He has till Friday. They have to use the protection on him. And let's also just say that one of these defensemen do end up getting picked up, who they ultimately have to expose, which kind of ticks them off.
Yes.
Just what does that create? I mean, you'd like to say in a perfect world, you know, listen, he has it in his contract, he had every right, let's just go back, status quo. But is there a lingering feeling?
I think there might be. Even though it is business nowadays, and there are two sides of that, but if I was the player and I had management come to me and say, you know, this is what we need from you, are you willing to do it? And I said no, even them coming to me would make me feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So in the back of my mind, if you know, if I do turn that situation down, I'm always thinking, okay, well, they're going to do something with me. They didn't want me here. They're trying to get rid of my contract, whatever. So, to me, I think it'd be an uncomfortable feeling for Dion. And at least I know if I was in his shoes and I said, yeah, okay, it's waived, I know there's a possibility I might be going somewhere to an expansion team, quite possibly, obviously, to grow. But, you know, this situation now with Vegas, you look at the people that they may have to be able to have access to pick up, whether it's through trade or through the draft. They're not going to be that bad a team. So it's not like the old days.
Well, according to the odds here, we didn't even get to with the Vegas odds that came out. The Leafs are sitting around. Like, they're at a team 16 to 1 odds.
Yeah.
Which puts
eighth best, I want to say.
Yeah, but puts them around the teams that are fourth best to actually. I mean, and we all know about me and numbers and odds and don't really understand that either, but that's pretty good. But just to end off on the Dion thing, you make a really good point, because it's easier said than done to be like, well, listen, you negotiated it. It's your every right to say no. It's your no move. Everyone go away. I can say no if I want. But if I were to put myself in his shoes, yeah, like, there is a part of me that thinks, wow, but they asked me.
Right.
They asked me, and now I feel weird. I can't help but feel,
don't feel, you feel like players now understand, though, the business better than they've ever have? Like, Dion Phaneuf's not stupid. He knows what his cap hit does to that team. And it's easier said than done for a player to think like a GM. And if you're the GM, you probably would do the same thing. But I think you have to take the emotion away from things. And you hear that all the time. Well, what's the business of
hockey? But see, I just think that's easier said than done. I mean, I can't help it. Like, I
don't think it's so much the emotional part of it. It's just the thought that's going to be planted in the back of my head when I say no.
Yeah. What are they going to do with me now?
That's exactly right.
I feel like you're in a no-win situation if you're the player, even if you have that, because they might come back at you still to hound you, to wave, to get traded, or... I mean, I don't know. It just, and now I'm not saying that they would ever do this. Who knows? But I just feel like it's always in their hands. What if suddenly your playing time is a little bit more limited, or just you look around the room, and I can't help but think in my head, I'd be wondering, what's that guy thinking? What's that teammate thinking?
Okay, yesterday we found out a couple of occasions where they did not ask players. Dan Girardi, Mark Stahl in New York, Scott Hartnell. Like, those are all, you know, they've been significant pieces to those organizations, but they would make sense for them, for those teams to get a little bit of relief from their cap hit. And, you know, they're not going to Dan Girardi because of maybe his leadership, or because he's been there for so long, or because they probably know he's going to say no. And what is the lingering effect to a guy like Girardi, who meant so much to that team, probably off the ice more so than on the ice now? And same with Mark Stahl as well. Like, it's interesting to see how these teams just approach all these situations and what ends up happening, because we're in uncharted territory. Like you said, you know, we've seen expansion. We haven't seen it for, 17 years? Mm-hmm. But this is a different system, a different setup. The league is different,
right?
You know, and how to win is different. You know, the last time we had an expansion team, that was pre-salary cap era. Mm-hmm. It's going to be wild.
How much do you make of these odds now that I go back? So it was released yesterday. Bodog.ca. Really looking favorably on the young players and what they can do to their team, because they have Connor McDavid is one of the favorites up there, because they mentioned with Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, and I said, and the Leafs, they put them at 16 to 1, which is the fourth best odds, which puts them around the Montreal Canadiens, which TSN now has the English speaking regional rights, if you didn't see what I tweeted out, and the Dallas Stars, Wild, and Rangers. 16 to 1 odds. Vegas, by the way, is right at the bottom at 150 to 1. So there you go. Canucks are also at the bottom there. The New Jersey Devils, who have the number one pick at the bottom. Colorado, kind of no surprise, at the bottom. Detroit Red Wings, again, 66 to 1. I mean, we know that great postseason run came to an end, but it looks like they don't have them as favorites for even making the playoffs again next year. But what do you make of the Leafs 16-1? Because this is what we keep discussing. They can make the playoffs and go further than the first round. Heck, they could even make it to the Eastern Conference Final, or they could completely miss out on the playoffs. I mean, how much stock do you put into these odds makers now?
To be quite honest with you, none.
Yeah?
I don't. I have to be just dead honest with you. Right now, you can't judge anybody. You don't know. Like, people have said that what Leafs did this year was a blip in the screen, and they're gonna digress next year and reverse the thing, and they have a great opportunity of not making the playoffs. And the game now is so, we talk about the parity, but you know, the rankings, all this other stuff that you see, it makes no sense to me. Teams come in this year. Obviously, there's teams that have a lot of work to do, and maybe they are fairly ranked closer to the bottom because they've got a long road to go before they get up near some of the top teams. But for the most part, no, those numbers mean nothing to me. And it'll be interesting to see them the way they'll be changing every week next year when the season starts, because there's going to be surprises and disappointments, and the fluctuation in those rankings is going to be mind-boggling.
For me, it's less about what certain individual teams are right now with their odds, but more so how the league is viewed. And you mentioned at the Edmonton Oilers, they are now tied for second with Chicago at 12-1. That's year three of Connor McDavid. And, you know, as much as we preach, you got to be patient and you got to develop guys properly, but there's also a pressure to win when some of your best players are still under their entry-level deal. Mm-hmm. And because the Cap Reaper comes in a few years, and for the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, they're getting a lot of productivity out of guys who are making more money off of their bonuses mostly than their standard deals. So for the Leafs, it's all been about the plan. Do they stick to this plan? Obviously, they're going to stick to the plan, but does the plan change because of what the Senators were doing this year and how a team that we all felt was going to lose to the Leafs in the first round makes it to the conference final and almost beats the Pittsburgh Penguins? Does it change given how the Penguins were able to win with that blue line? It's just, again, it goes back to being the copycat league, and are the Leafs closer than maybe we thought they would be a year ago or even a couple months ago? So it's interesting to see, like you said, mm-hmm. the view of the younger teams and how quickly they can have success in this league.
There's a part of me, too, that wants to just say, why can't we expect the Leafs to be really good and even contend in the next few years? And I was asked, this is in the beginning of the year when it came to Austin Matthews, like, who would you compare him to? Because we love to do that. You try to take a player and compare him to a current guy now. And I said, for me, symbolically, I almost compare him to a Sidney Crosby, because Sidney Crosby, when he came to the Pittsburgh Penguins, they didn't actually qualify for the playoffs in that first time that he was there. Then they did, lost out, and then in their third year, they went and won the cup. And I know there's a lot of people just maybe kind of rolling their eyes to say, well, what are the chances of that happening? Well, I don't know. What are the chances of that happening? And we saw what Austin Matthews did. And I sit there and I say 4 goals in his first game ever, 40 goals in his rookie season, not to mention all the records he broke for at least American players. Why can't we think that with proper chips around him, mm-hmm. Austin Matthews can help lead this team to not just the Eastern Conference Finals, but maybe even beyond, dare I say, because of what he brings as talent, a skill, and leadership? Why can't we symbolically compare those two players? And maybe there's some people that want to pump the brakes. You don't want to get your hopes up high. You don't want to be disappointed. I know the Leafs fan base is the most criticized for getting excited, right? And that, it's a joke, but kind of not a joke when everyone's like, oh, I bet you're already planning your parade route. You know what I'm going to do with that parade route if you bring up that stupid joke one more time? Mm-hmm. Tell you where I'm going to shove it. Like, it just drives me mad, but that's what happens, right? The second Leafs fans get excited about something, they really do get hit in the head like whack-a-mole from other fan bases. So I can understand why there's a lot of Leafs fans out there that don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it. Why can't Austin Matthews do to the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first few years of him being in the league that Sidney Crosby did to the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Well, there's a good possibility that he can do it. I'm not mm-hmm. saying that next year they're going to fall apart or anything, but you know, the growth that they had this year and you know, the way they took off so quickly, was it expected? I don't think anybody expected it. I think it was a surprise in some areas, but there's pieces that they need to find to help this team get ahead and go move forward from here. And what they are, that's why Lou and Shanny and all those and Hunts and those guys get paid the big dough. But those are the pieces they got to find out to bolster them. Do they have a good young core? Absolutely, with Marner and Nylander and Matthews, and you know, you go right down the list of all these young players. But they're going to have to find guys that are going to help to bolster those young guys and keep them growing. You know, that's why they brought Boyle and guys like that mm-hmm. in, was that for that leadership. They needed that, and they know these young kids are going to be good. you know, will some of them go into their sophomore jinx? Because we've, how many times have we seen that? Their first year in the league, they have a great year. Second year in the league, they have that little that little drop.
Other teams figure them out, and you're not, they're not surprising anyone anymore.
Yeah, they, I mean, the scouting reports on these guys now, going into the next season, everybody's going to be paying a lot more attention to them. The matchups may be better on the back end for opposition teams now. They're going to be playing against tougher defensemen, and we'll see. Is it a definite no that they're not going to be in the playoffs, or they're not going to get better? Absolutely not. We're hoping they do. Mm-hmm. We're hoping every team does, so that the you know, the progress of the game and the quality of the games get better with every team.
If you're the Leafs, do you want the cap to stay flat? Just because you're in such a good position, which we'll discuss a little bit more with Bob McKenzie when he joins us in about 15 minutes time, because I do want to ask him about the article that was written in the Athletic by David Alter on whether the Leafs should be a little bit more proactive in trying to shed themselves of the Joffrey Lupul contract, because that could hap them, I guess, with it could hurt them with overage penalties. We'll get Bob to explain that a little bit more. But if you're a team that's still looking good because of all the young guys that you have, are you hoping it doesn't go up by much to help the Chicagos or help the Tampa Bays that have to make those kinds of signings to bring people in? Maybe you're like, no, I don't want it to go up because... We're okay with 73.
Can it stay the same this year, but then drastically move up next year?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Anything's possible.
Because Austin Matthews, I think he's going to be at least a 10 per year.
I'm just saying, if we can manipulate the system, my friends, just do it. Come on, Lou. You're called the Lou Father for a reason. All right, let's welcome in now a current NHLer, former Toronto Maple Leaf, Mr. Dominic Moore, joining Leafs Lunch here. How you doing, Dominic?
I'm pretty good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, pleasure having you on here. It's been a while since we last saw each other. Hope you're doing well, my friend. And it looks like you're heading into your sixth annual Smash Fest. It's going to be held July 20th here in Toronto. What can you tell us about this event, why it started, and how it started?
Well, for those who have not been or have not heard of it, it's basically a charity ping pong party. So it's at Tower. We get about 25 NHL players from around the league every year that are generous enough to give their time and be a part of it. And we have a pro-am doubles tournament with players and guests. And then after that, we have the singles championship where we crown an NHL ping pong champion. Ping pong is the theme, but it's mostly a party. And the best part about it is that it's all for a good cause. We're raising money for concussion and cancer research.
Well, the fact that you're holding it at the Steam Whistle Brewery, not a bad location if it's a party atmosphere, but very impressive. You've now raised over $500,000 since 2012. So we need to ask you the most important question. Who is the best of all the years so far that this has been going on? Who's the best ping pong player?
Well, the two-time defending champion is Patrick Eves, and he had a fantastic season, as a lot of people know, this year, and you know, he scored 30 goals, and I'm taking a lot of credit for the fact that a lot of his goals were hand-eye coordination in front of the net, and I think he developed that, you know, by working on his ping-pong game over the summer to get ready for Smash Fest. And I'll have you know, these guys take it very seriously.
Oh, yeah.
The first part of the event is, as I said, the first part of the event is mostly a party with the doubles, but then the real, you know, the real intense guys get after it after that, and it's fun to watch, so... If anybody has not been, if you go to smashfest.ca, you'll kind of see what the event is all about. There's videos there, and again, we're raising money for concussions, which is obviously important for hockey players and athletes of all kinds, but not just athletes, as we all know. And then, of course, the cancer research. We've got an exciting project that we just initiated this year. It's a rare cancer research project, one-of-a-kind project that we got off the ground with the Broad Institute, which is an MIT and Harvard-affiliated research institute in Boston. And being with the Bruins this year, I was able to be there firsthand and work with them, and it's an incredible project, so we're pretty proud of it.
So I'm going to put you on the spot, because if you're going to mention the best player in Patrick Eves, who's the worst player that you've seen?
Oh, man. Well, there's a lot of contenders for that.
let's keep it to NHL players.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, but probably one of the worst is Cam Talbot. But, you know, his enthusiasm is just incredible.
That's great.
He's been a longtime supporter of the event. He's been multiple years. And so you know, it's fun to laugh at him, but he's an outstanding guy and an incredible supporter of the event.
Hand-eye coordination, you'd think he would have that in the bag.
That's the thing. Most goalies, you know what? And I should also put Kevin Weeks in that category.
Oh, Weeksy burned.
Atrocious. Yeah, but he's just, the funniest part about Kevin is that he's just sweating up a storm.
Oh, we've Sergei Sweateroff. That's what we would call him in the studio.
Yeah.
Well, that's because every time they want to hit the ball with the paddle, they want to do a kick save at the same time as well. So their technique is probably completely off. So how do people become a part of this?
So most of our tickets are sold through corporations, corporate packages. That's, you know, the kind of charity event setup, but we deliberately keep tickets available that you can get online. So if you go to smashfest.ca, again, you can buy the tickets there. It's an expensive ticket. I won't lie to you. It's a charity event, however. And if you break it down, see, I always tell people, if you break it down, you go out in Toronto on any given night, you're going to spend minimum, what, $100 on food and drinks. The event is unlimited food, open bar, unlimited open bar. It is a 19-plus event, I have to say. And so the tickets are $250. But again, it's a great cause, and I promise an event that people will never forget.
I'm there. Thanks for the invitation, Dom.
Yeah,
that's great.
Dom, you can spend $100 on parking. So that's a steal, $250 a ticket. Now, I will say this. If you're looking for a ringer, I may or may not have my own ping pong paddle. So just
which
want you to know.
Which, of course, makes you a good player just by having the
I'm
paddle.
A fantastic player. Just wanted to let you know.
So having your own paddle is usually a sign of prowess. Aaron Ekblad came last year, and he thought he was a pretty good player. And when he arrived, he saw the guys with their own paddles and their own little zip carrying cases, and knew right away he was out of his league.
It's very, very true. Well, Dom, much success on July 20th at the Steam Whistle Brewery, and just congratulations on a great event that's now entering its sixth year. Really appreciate you taking the time here.
Thanks so much for the support of the event, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. That is Dominic Moore, former Toronto Maple Leaf, current NHLer. Smash Fest 6 is in Toronto Thursday, July 20th at the Steam Whistle Brewery. You heard him say it there, $250 a ticket. Open bar. That's definitely worth it. Go to smashfest.ca.
Sorry, was that an open bar or is that a...
It's an open bar.
Okay. That's Andy when she's at the open bar.
That's called Italian wedding.
Oh.
I just got the unlimited food thing. That's that was my end.
Yeah, unlimited food. And you get to watch NHLers, a lot of them, not be so good at their craft, right? Maybe they're not all that good at the ping-a-pong. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. We're going to have Bobby Mack join us, our TSN Hockey Insider. We need to get down to the nitty-gritty on the whole Joffrey Leupold thing and his contract. And is it really that bad if the Leafs were to hold on to him for the year that's remaining? Does it really hurt them when it comes to going over the cap? Because we know the young guys have hit all of their bonuses. What are the overage penalties? You know, all that fun stuff that I have no clue about.
Can I take a break?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to ask Bob the question, and then we're all just going to sit back and just have him answer it. So, and of course, he'll just answer a whole bunch of other things. Another topic I wanted to get to, so I'd love to do this whole let it simmer for a bit. Gary Bettman presenting the Conn Smythe and the Stanley Cup. Should that change in the future? Should he still be a part of the ceremony, or should they get, you know, someone who doesn't get booed? Is it getting out of hand that the greatest, what we like to dub, the hardest and greatest trophy to win in sport, is the presentation of it getting ruined because it's drowned out by boos? We will discuss when we return here on Leafs Lunch as you continue to listen on TSN 1050 and stream online, tsn.ca. Welcome back into Leafs Lunch, TSN 1050, streaming online on TSN 4. Be sure to follow us at Leafs Lunch 1050 on Twitter. Carlisle writing in, did I just say Bettman was drowned out by booze, as in alcohol?
Right, that's what you did say, wasn't it?
Well, booze
that's
as
all
in...
I heard it. Andy, don't backtrack now.
Mimosa Tuesdays.
That's how you started the whole show.
Now, that would be a sight to see. That I'm okay with if he was drowned out by booze. I would tune in a heartbeat. Andy Petrillo alongside Greg Gilbert and Mark Rowe. No, the question was whether or not the Stanley Cup presentation should change because of the booing that goes on. And the reason why this time it really stood out to me, because we know, commissioners, and you're bringing it up, Mark, like it's across all pro sports now, it seems to be the thing to do. But if we just keep it to the NHL, we know Gary Bettman's been booed for years. We know at the draft, that's just what happens. He gets booed. But it really stood out to me in Nashville, because that was the one market. I mean, still, there are a lot of, you know, people who don't believe that Nashville's a hockey market, strictly because it did struggle so much in the beginning. I mean, it's Nashville, for crying out loud. People have a difficult time wrapping their head around, really, is it a hockey place? It almost moved. We know Jim Balsillie wanted to take it and, you know, bring another team to the GTA. Let's not forget it was Gary Bettman who essentially saved that franchise and kept it in Nashville. So when Predators fans were booing him, I really was confused. For the first time, I'm like, okay, I get it. He's the commissioner of the league, and that's just kind of what we do, which I also take issue with, because you're not booing him for any real reason. There's no real meaning there. He's the reason why you have a team. He's the reason why you're even in the Stanley Cup final, because the team was allowed to stay there and get to where it is. Okay, fine, I get David Poile's a GM, but you get what I'm saying. They would have been celebrating in Hamilton if it wasn't for Gary Bettman keeping it there.
You had to bring it up.
Sorry.
Speaking on behalf of my hometown of Hamilton, Ontario.
Sorry, it's not going to happen.
Okay, no one in Nashville should be booing Gary Bettman.
That's what I'm saying. People in Hamilton should have been booing. But that's where it just left me scratching my head. I'm like, guys, you can't be... What? It makes no sense. So there's a two-part question here, which is, you know, number one, does the presentation need to change in some way? Because... is the ceremony of presenting this incredible trophy, which they've worked so hard for, does it suddenly just kind of get degraded when it's just drowned out in booing? I don't want to say booze anymore. When it's drowned out in booze, although the cup will be drowned in booze later on when it gets its day with the players. And then, I guess, secondly, is it just getting out of hand? Like, do people even know what they're booing anymore? Like, is it just becoming stupid now?
Whether or not it's stupid or not, I think a fan is entitled to that. I also think that Gary Bettman's entitled to be a part of that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is the commissioner of this league. There's a reason why he's still the commissioner. As much as everyone out there either likes to make fun of him or rip him, the owners love him. And if the owners didn't love him, he wouldn't be the commissioner of the NHL. And so any success that the NHL is having is in large part due to Gary Bettman. So this is the biggest stage that the league has. Usually the commissioner is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say usually, I mean... the commissioner's always
he's part of it. He's the central
Roger Goodell,
point.
Same thing. Rob Manfred, same thing. So I don't understand, you know, I understand the booing. That's fine. And he's, I guess, embraced it because it's happened since the early 90s. But I don't see another solution that all of a sudden changes everything. Like, he's going to be there. It's not like Gary Bettman's not going to be at the game,
mm-hmm.
or he's not going to be on the ice. So if you brought in Mark Messier to be a part of the ceremony, then it's Mark Messier who's getting booed because he's next to Gary Bettman.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's another issue because, like, why are you booing Mark Messier?
Well, and that's where you have to figure out, because then, yeah, you don't want to put a legend out on the ice, I guess, and get booed. And then it just becomes just a debacle.
Yeah, well, would it have happened if they won it in Pittsburgh? Would it has been? They would have booed him. There's no question about it.
I think they still would have booed him.
Would it have been as loud?
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. Like, when if you were to ask anybody in the stands, like, why are you booing the commissioner? And they'd be like, well, because every year they boo him. It's almost like a history thing. It
yeah.
wouldn't be a part of hockey if you didn't boo the commissioner.
And those are two markets that should be on his
thankful.
Side, right?
Absolutely.
Like Pittsburgh, there's a couple times where they've had some serious situations financially. You know, and a lot of people say, you know, Sidney Crosby saved that organization, which he did, but so did Gary Bettman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that team could have relocated.
Yeah, we forget the history of a lot of these teams. Chris Archer writing a good point, saying, you know, I mean, obviously it's a culmination of things, right? Three lockouts, soon to be four. Bite your tongue, Chris. But he's not wrong because, you know, the reason with the Olympics causing a problem there. So you can see that. So, okay, fine. If there's reason to boo Bettman, then there comes the other question of, and I know that's the thing, like, you know that he's the commissioner. Why would he ever want to step aside from presenting the league's cup to the winner of the league? But does something need to change with regard to, you know, trying to make it a little bit more of a joyous, momentous occasion of the Conn Smythe? I know Pierre Maguire, when he was on TSN 1050 yesterday, said maybe you bring in a former Conn Smythe winner to present that trophy. So maybe you reduce the risk of it being booed. Maybe Gary Bettman's still out on the ice, but you have a former legend from the team that just won present it. Like, maybe it's Mario Lemieux who's handing the trophy on over to, or the cup on over to Sidney Crosby. I mean, maybe there are ways around it. Or, I don't know, maybe there are a ton of people out there that really just don't care and they're A-okay with the boos and the trophy presentation being done in that way.
Again, I think if Gary Bettman's there, then the people that want to boo him are going to boo him. And your model is similar to the Super Bowl model, where a Hall of Famer carries a Vince Lombardi trophy through the tunnel of the team, mm-hmm. and you know the players on the team kind of hit it, and sometimes they're mic'd up, and they shouldn't be mic'd up, but anyways, but he hands it off, and then Roger Goodell's still on the stage, and then the commissioner's always the guy with the microphone. Like, it's, again, I don't want to say it's his league, because it's everyone's league, everyone, but it kind of is. It's like, he's in charge. See, mm-hmm. I don't, you know, I think we're overthinking this.
Yeah,
and the biggest question is who's going to do it? Is it? What about the owner of the winning team?
Mm-hmm.
What about him presenting it to? I mean, it should be presented to him and the
but
whole
again,
crew.
It's a league event. It's just kind of weird that all of a sudden the Pittsburgh Penguins would take over the ceremonies for this. Like, at some point, like somewhere or another, the league is going to have a presence, as they should.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is their marquee event. So, if anything, then maybe it's Bill Daly. But does Bill Daly get booed?
Absolutely. There wouldn't be any difference.
You can't avoid, I guess, the commissioner getting booed, and obviously he's going to say what he wants to say. He gives his speech, and he has every right. I'm talking, I guess, the handoffs more than anything. Like, maybe it's just, you know, you get the crowd into it by having a former Conn Smythe winner present to the current one, because there's some respect for a player before, and then maybe you have a legend from the winning team on hand to then present the Stanley Cup. So Gary Bettman's still part of it. He still has his speech, which you don't really hear because he gets booed, but the actual handoff of the hardware maybe is just done by former legends. And just, I don't know, make it a little bit more something that isn't like, hey, you just destroyed yourself for four rounds for, you know, 2 months, and then it's just laden in booze, and then B-O-O-E-S, thank you, laden all those, the crowd booing, and then here you go, just take it and go, right? Like, I don't know, I just feel like, and I know it's such a small moment, and it's like, what, 0.2 seconds, like that handoff, and I get it. But that's what you play all year for. And then that moment where it gets handed, it's just, ugh, I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Well, here's a question for you. Say Andy Petrillo, not the Leafs Lunch host, but just Andy Petrillo from Maple, Ontario, who's been cheering on the Leafs her whole life, is at the ACC Game 7. The Leafs just win. And the cup is about to be handed out for the first time since 1967. Are you booing Gary Bettman in that moment?
I'm probably too drunk at that point. Like, fair. I'm so happy and drunk, I've passed out. I probably would miss the trophy presentation.
This is such a
show. But I would be. If I saw that clock ticking down and I knew they were going to win, I 5 shots immediately to go along with the booze already
but
had.
Would you be still awake counting the clock down those last few seconds?
That is a question. Didn't I ever tell you my Grey Cup? When they had the Grey Cup here a couple years ago and Toronto ended up winning, we all, my friends and I.
2012.
Yeah, we all went out. We had a time. We're watching it. First time ever. I'm so embarrassed. First time ever I got cut off at a bar. Anyways.
Right. The cutoff day.
I got cut off. I can't believe it. We go home. So my husband and I go home. I'm pretty sure I saw the Toronto Argos get crowned CFL champs. In my head, I saw it. Everything. I was there to the end. We flip on the TV. It's in the third quarter. What happened to that night? What happened to my life? I don't even know what happened. I don't even know how the night got away from me, how I didn't stay to the end. But, yeah, no, that can happen.
Crazy, so, Greg, we're on air right now.
Yeah,
she's talking about
this. We're just being honest.
That's a little scary,
actually. Just being honest. You know what? I don't sit on a righteous throne, my friends. I have stories, too. Let me tell you. And sometimes they're not pretty. But I don't know. I don't know. I'd be too busy yelling.
Of course you wouldn't be booing, because you'd be celebrating.
It's just what you do.
I don't know. Yeah, anyways.
And again, it's one of those, all it takes is a couple hundred people in a building full of 20,000 to be, oh, well, people are booing. The whole building's booing. Like, it's a couple sections here or there. And
Well, it's history. I mean, every time you've seen the cup handed over, it's well, the first few seconds is booed. So if you're a newcomer to the game of hockey,
right.
it's tradition. Oh, right. Look, okay, yeah. Oh, well, one, okay, boo, and then, oh, yay. Like,
and guess, well, I assume, but I've gone to a few drafts, and he's been booed there.
Can't even hear.
Now, one of them was Philadelphia.
He was so probably one of those guys.
Oh, Philly just boos everyone.
They just boo everyone.
Yeah.
So, the only people that they boo more are the Rangers. When the Rangers made their pick, that was the only time they booed louder.
Incredible fan base. That's... They would boo their own mother if they got up on stage to make the pick. I know this.
When I've seen it.
I've seen it. I've lived it. My husband is like a gentle giant. He is one of the kindest men you will ever meet. But when he gets into sports mode, being from Philly, mm-hmm. his eyes go squiggly. They go red. Oh, like, goodness. I can't even explain. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like, are you born that way? If you're in Philly, you're just born that way.
Yeah.
So strange. We're going to try and tackle numbers here when we come back on Leafs Lunch. Not really. Well, we managed to simplify it. Not me. Greg managed to simplify it a little bit with trying to understand whether or not the Leafs should really push hard to dump the Joffrey Lupo contract. They have one more year of having him on the books, which, by the way, he can be exposed, which is kind of strange because he doesn't meet the 70 games requirement. But it doesn't matter. You can expose him in the draft, and I don't. Can you see
he's
Vegas?
He's not in the Chris Pronger category.
No,
he can. They deemed him physically
Robidon,
able.
Yeah, Robidon, Nathan Horton are the only two who are exempt, mm-hmm. who are on LTIR. And even though Joffrey Lupo's on LTIR, he can.
What I
want to
know is, does Lupo take a physical to get to be exempt from that list? Like, how do they determine it?
No, I guess they'll just expose him.
Yeah,
that's it.
No, but. How do they determine whether or not he gets on that list?
Mean the exempt list, like Nathan Horton, where you know for a fact he can't play?
I don't
play?
Know. When was the last time you saw Lupo? I'm sure he is healthy enough to play.
Do we even know where he is?
I think in California.
It is a very... And I think this is why nobody's really talked about him, because we've forgotten about him.
We haven't seen him. He's haven't had updates
year and
what's
a half.
Going on, so...
I mean, Robidoux had his appearances because he's been helping out with the coaching staff. I think he was even part of the Marlies when they were making
Robidoux's
their run.
Robidoux's actually the richest peewee coach in the history of Quebec minor hockey, I think, right now.
Very true. All right, we will discuss that when we return here on Leafs Lunch. Don't go anywhere. They'll rescue you from your car lease busters. Heroic, maybe, hopeful. Helpful, and they're also hopeful, totally. People would love to take over your car lease. For your lease release, go to leasebusters.com. Andy Petrillo alongside Greg Gilbert, Mark Rowe.
I'm hopeful you can be enlightening in this segment because you're not getting it from me.
Good luck. This is why, as you said, Greg, there are other people who get paid the big bucks to figure out this number crunching.
No, the best comment from Greg before the show, we were talking about Vegas, and I said, man, yeah, it's a lot of work for Greg McPhee, or George McPhee. And he's like, no, it's not McPhee. It's always the assistant.
Yeah.
It's McCrimmon.
It's McCrimmon who's doing all
Billy's
the work.
Billy's doing all the footwork and
flipping
the pages.
Here's the the article was written by David Alter with The Athletic saying, you know, why the Leafs need to dump Joffrey Lupo this summer to Las Vegas or elsewhere. And he mentions, you know, the exempt list that came out and the two players that were on there from the Toronto Maple Leafs, Nathan Horton and Stefan Robidoux. And the players who were put on those exempt lists were just players you know for a fact are never going to play again. Chris Pronger was on that. You just know they're not going to play. So here, again, I got to love the two-part questions. Number one, Joffrey Lupo, the fact that he wasn't exempt tells you he can play. So it also just kind of, doesn't it just raise the radar a little bit to say, still, like, what is going on that Lou has him somewhere as opposed to having him with the team and then either A, trying to get him to play or B, trying to trade him? So you're telling me there's a perfectly healthy player out there, healthy at least to the point where the league has chosen not to make him exempt from the draft. So he's healthy enough. Why hasn't he played? Like, that's one question I have. Like, where is he? What's going on? Why haven't you tried to play him? Or why haven't you tried to trade him already? And then number two is, okay, fine. It is what it is. You're going to expose him. Good chance Vegas not going to take him. So he has one more year at 5.25 against the cap. So we know the Leafs are going to go over because they still have a lot of players that they have to sign, and we know the bonuses are probably going to be around $5 million that the rookies hit this year. So they're going to go over the cap. But really, if you look at what they're given with Joao Filippo, if I'm making sense of this, because, you know, this is, I try to listen closely when guys like Dave Boulin and Craig Button talk. I'm kind of sort of listening. Okay, I'm listening. But if we're speaking hypotheticals, let's just say the Leafs have $1 million. They're $1 million under the cap. Let's just round out Joffrey's number here to $5 million, the $1 million to bring them up to the cap. So then they have $4 million that they can spend over the cap. Mm-hmm. That'll probably get eaten up by the bonuses that they have to pay, which means that carries over into the next year. So they'll have to pay a penalty. But would the penalty be minimal compared to, I don't know, what it would take to try and get rid of Lupo, which means you'd probably have to get rid of him with an asset.
I was going to say, that's the one of the biggest yeah. reasons why he hasn't been traded, if he is healthy enough to play, is A, that contract, and for you to take it on. B, the other team doesn't know what they're getting because he hasn't played in 2 years.
So they're going to want an asset. They're going to want a young player. They're going to want a pick.
I would think they'd want a significant asset.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Does Team Andy Petrillo want to take on Joffrey Lupo, that contract, for nothing?
No, right? you're asking for a young player.
You want
player.
A pick, and you probably want a prospect, too.
Yeah.
So what I want to know is, what is the dialogue? Like, what is it? Is it Lupo telling the league, or Lupo's representatives, or the PA telling the league that he's healthy enough to play? Is it the Leafs telling the league that he's able to play? Is he just suddenly able to play, or has he been really physically able to play all year, but they've been able to push that under a rug?
Like, apparently, according to Alter's article, the league had been getting information on players since November by asking agents and teams the status of the players. I would also assume that they would have to provide medical records, because you can't just lie and say, oh yeah, he's completely, like, he can't play. Okay, fine, we'll put him on the exempt list. No, we're not going to take your word for it. What are the medical documents?
He's also been on long-term IR. So
what date did he come off of that? Because he's not on it now.
He must have.
That's for the purpose
of being, I guess, exposed,
right.
What have you. So, but my question is the penalty a small price to pay, the overage penalty on the cap, a small price to pay, as opposed to trying to trade Lupo or have Vegas take him and give away a young player? We know Steve Simmons wrote an article over the weekend where he said that teams have, you know, when the Leafs have been inquiring about defensemen, the word coming back is that it's probably going to cost Connor Brown. Like, that's kind of what we've been hearing. So, a Connor Brown, a Kasperi Kapanen, who knows? Like, basically, it's a young player who still has a long way to go and, you know, still has a high ceiling, so a lot of promise. Do you want to part with a guy like that, or would you rather, you know, suck it up, Buttercup, for one more year and pay the $1 million or $2 million that you'll probably get charged in penalty?
Well, we are talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs here.
They got lots of money.
Yeah. So I think this is a three martini lunch we're talking about. So eating that for 1 year for Toronto, I don't think is going to financially break them. So it might be the option they're looking at. I can't see too many other ones. And obviously Vegas isn't going to take them, and somebody else. You know, the trade is right there, like you were talking about, Mark and Andy. The trade might be right there, but they're going to have to give up something else on top of that, for sure, and a good piece of something else, too. Mm-hmm.
And I would think Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan and the entire staff value those assets more so than the financial penalty that might happen with Lupo, as you pointed out. Like, if there's one thing that the Leafs have always had, especially with this regime, is that ownership is giving them the green light on anything. So they could bury money. They can bury Nathan Horton's contract because it doesn't go up against the cap, and they end up giving up David Clarkson, whose money did go up against the cap. So those are some of the benefits that you have for the Leafs. But yeah, if you're talking about significantly upgrading your blue line, which is what we have loved to do for the last 2 months, it's going to take at least Connor Brown. Like,
well, and that's the name that seems to be floating around. And Ray Ferraro yesterday on Overdrive also gave his 2 cents on Connor Brown possibly being traded by the Toronto Maple Leafs.
He's really interesting because he seems like he would be the most expendable, yet his versatility and what he does is so different than what the other guys do. Maybe that makes him, in its own way, very, very valuable. Like, if you take him out, does that open up room for Soshnikov to move up? Babcock seems to really like him. And he's kind of a misfit on the on that fourth line, I think. He just it like he, it seems like his game gets kind of cut in half, and this is all you get to do because, well, that's all the ice time we have. Like, could he do what Brown does? I don't know.
See, that's also tough because Nikita Soshnikov has been injured quite a bit. So I do feel like we haven't seen the best of Soshnikov, but we don't. I don't know because he's been injured, and we knew he drew into the lineup over a Josh Levo because of his ability to play on the penalty kill. Remember that created quite the uproar because Josh Levo was putting up all these numbers when he played, and then Babcock came out and said, yeah, but I need Soshnikov because he plays on the PK. But I don't know, Dave Poulin also brought up a good point yesterday and just said, like, this guy is a three-zone player, right? Like, this Connor Brown can play offense, neutral, defensive zone. Like, he found him, because I brought up the scenario, or the I guess I could say the ultimatum. I was like, would you rather trade, if you had to, a young player, Connor Brown or Kasperi Kapanen? And Pooley right away said, I'm going to hold on to Brown because he just seems to provide a little bit more, he thinks. Whereas Kapanen, as much as he's a great player, he has an offensive flair that you already have on the team. How do you feel about that argument?
A little more expendable, I guess.
Who, Kapanen?
Right? Yeah,
Kapanen. I guess it's... Well, I mean, yeah, Brown's got, he's got so many attributes to him. Does he have the offensive skill as Kapanen?
Mm-mm.
I don't know. It all depends what they want to go on. Andy was just saying, do they have enough of that piece or those pieces of the puzzle that are going to put the pucks in the net down the road, or do they keep Kapanen? Because Kapanen's, he's a hard-working kid.
I mean, oh, yeah.
He plays hard both ways. There's no two ways about it. So can he fit into a third-line slot, or do they want to try to find a spot in the top six for him sooner or later? And that's where it's coming to me. I mean, Brown's happy, third-line, fourth-line. He can go to second-line, first-line the way he plays. But Kapanen, he's got to play at a certain level. You can't see him on the fourth line with the skills and the abilities he has. So if they think they have enough guys with that asset, then he's movable. If not, then it may be Brown. But they're both good hockey players. I would keep Brown. I just think he's more versatile. Mm-hmm. And can be used in more situations.
You know, I'm picturing Greg right now in one of those coaches' rooms that we sometimes get to see on the specials, the behind-the-scenes kind of series. And you would have your lines up, and you would look at Connor Brown and the numbers that he puts up, but you would probably say, okay, Soshnikov, can he play here as well? And can he play over there? And all those points. And, you know, Brown was given opportunities that Soshnikov, as you pointed out, because of some injuries, just because of where he slotted in, didn't necessarily get. Now the question is, if you do give up a guy like Connor Brown, do you internally have the bodies to kind of fill in and not miss a beat? And I think that would probably be the frustration as a coach, where, you know, you like his game, but you haven't necessarily seen different parts of his game that you're kind of being rushed in to do, right?
Right. Yeah, well, there's been situations he's been put in that he's not quite ready for. I mean, he's 23 years old, and he's still going through that learning experience. But that's the what you have to do as a coach and management staff is you've got to weigh the pros and cons. Kapanen, he's been injured. Okay, is it going to be a chronic thing year after year where it's going to be in and out type thing? That's what you have to. That's one of the issues you have to deal with, and one part of the decision making process that you have to make. And Soshnikov, where is he going to fit in? What's he going to do? Okay, do we have enough of that? Do we, you know, it is a big puzzle that you have to put together. And if you have too many pieces of one, it is actually a weakness. It's actually a weakness. You've got to fit those guys that are, you know, your grinders and your third line and utility guys. And then you got to put the skill guys up there too. And it works on your back end. But it's a tough decision because they've got a plethora of good young hockey players, and they've got to find out which ones they're gonna keep and which ones are not.
Ooh, the decisions that Lou Lamoriello has to make this summer.
And who's
summer.
Hit their ceiling and who can still go
and
a couple
who
more.
Who still has a bunch more?
Like 20 goals, Connor Brown. Is that like the best season that he's ever going to have? And maybe does it more, five or six more times. And if he does, that's great. But, you know, does Soshnikov have a higher ceiling? Does another, you know, does Kapanen have another, you know, ceiling?
Yeah.
Another level to get to?
Well, guess what? We have 3 more weeks to discuss that.
Can't wait.
That's it for us here on Leafs Lunch. Scott MacArthur coming up next.